coming up, doing my full first round mock draft, exploring what happens if Darren Peterson goes first to the Wizards. But first, bringing on Tom Haverstraw to talk about everything going on around the NBA. Giannis, LeBron, Trae Young, Knicks, and a lot else. That's coming up right now with me and Tom. Welcome back to the Kevin O'Connor Show. Today, we're going to do a full first round mock draft, exploring what happens if Darren Peterson goes first to the Wizards. But first, get Tom Haverstraw on to talk about everything going on around the NBA. Let's start with some Giannis news here, Tom, because Chris Haynes this week reported that the Bucks may play it slow with Giannis Antetokounmpo, and there's a chance this goes into free agency. I got a couple thoughts here. One, yeah, that is possible. I think that's because the Bucks are still trying to haggle with teams, including Miami. They're trying to get everything they possibly can. And I think with John Horst, their general manager, his career is going to be defined by this Giannis Antetokounmpo trade. It's not going to be defined by the championship and getting Chris Middleton and Brooke Lopez and Drew Holiday. It's going to be defined by the Giannis trade. And so, yes, they might take their time here and get everything they can. That said, everything that I've heard for weeks now, I said this on a mock, I think, 2 weeks ago, the Bucks are indicating to teams that they think they're going to have multiple lottery picks. They've been indicating that to other teams when it comes to trade talks. They've been indicating that to agents when it comes to trying to schedule prospect workouts. So the Bucks for weeks have said they're going to have multiple lottery picks, not just number 10. It could be 10 and 13, could be 10 and I don't know. I'm not sure. I don't know. It depends on the destination for Giannis and how elaborate a trade could be. Maybe it's 8 and 10. Fact is, that's what they've been saying. So I still think, and I would still bet on a Giannis deal happening before the draft or on draft night itself. But I would not rule out, as Chris Haynes said, this dragging along even more when it's dragged along as long as it already has.
Yeah, to me, Kev, this you have to really keep in mind that there's a lot of posture in this lead up to the draft and understanding all these reports. Who benefits from this information being out there? I've been used in my reporting before where I hear something from an executive or a scout and I report it. And then afterwards, I learn that maybe I was used to get information out there because they wanted to build leverage. So why would this get out there that the Milwaukee Bucks want potentially to extend this past the draft deadline or the draft night and potentially go into free agency? Well, I think one of the reasons why they want to do this or have this information out there is to build leverage, is to say, look, if you're not willing to put in your best offer here in the coming days leading up to Tuesday night at 8:30, then we're just gonna go into free agency. This is a message to all of the teams that get your best offer in right now, because if you don't do it, we're going to have the opportunity to go in the next week or two, and we won't be able to draft who we want with your pick that you're floating to us. So if you really are putting on the table these picks, they become a lot more valuable here, and I think teams are probably sitting there and being like, all right, do we call their bluff here? Do we wait until, nah, I don't want to call their bluff. We should probably get them now and put in that extra pick or remove a protection on there to gain some sort of negotiating power. I expect that the Milwaukee Bucks are going to trade Giannis Antetokounmpo this weekend because, Kev, like you point out, if they add picks to their draft night on Tuesday, I think they're going to want to know what picks they have with time to evaluate those positions and potentially flip those picks again to move up or move back. So I think it's imperative for the Milwaukee Bucks to this weekend figure out their best options here and make all the other suitors put their best offer on the table. Because if they have the 10th pick, great. But if they move up potentially in the draft, I think their scouts are going to be working overtime and their draft experts are going to be working overtime to try to figure out who they want to select. And Kev, you and I both know the Milwaukee Bucks have had an awful draft record over the past 10 years or so. And so for them, if they get picks ahead of Tuesday night, they got to make sure they nail these because it has not been a strong history of draft picking in the Horse and the Milwaukee Bucks going back.
it's been so rough under the Horst era. So many whiffs that have put them in this position that they are today, with Giannis likely being traded away. And maybe things would be different if they had hit on a lot of those picks. So I think for the Bucks, I mean, it's kind of funny. Like you mentioned how everybody has an agenda, right? Like different sources around the league. This week, and I'm sure eventually it'll be reported, I don't want to say the player's name, but there is a prospect in this year's draft who has a elbow defect that he was born with, where he can't fully extend his arm out straight. And I have heard about this. A lot of people have heard about this. And I said it to somebody to get confirmation. And they're like, yeah, whoever told that to you is just trying to kill that player's draft stock. And it's like, well, that might be true, but it's also possible that you don't want his draft stock to be killed because you want him taken high, you know, like that means another player's fallen. So everybody has their agendas. And this time of year, it is truly the silly season with the draft, with free agency, with trades. Everybody has their agendas. And like you said, the Bucks want this out there for a reason. And that reason is probably because they're just putting out the threat like, hey, we're just not going to do anything if you don't give us what we want.
If you're not
going
to give us our best offer, we're not going to take it, right? Like we can extend this into July. But again, like Kev, so much of what the Milwaukee Bucks should want to do is have control over their pick this year in a loaded draft. By waiting until after draft night, they're not going to have nearly as much selection power. Obviously, with the draft in the rearview mirror, you're going to be stuck with whoever the guy, the GM for the team that you're trading with, selected at that position. Now, I do think that given that this weekend or on Tuesday night when we have our live show on Yahoo Sports, there might be a Giannis trade that night. It might be tonight. It might be this weekend. It might be Monday. I think teams are rightfully concerned about whether they want to give up so much for Giannis and Antetokounmpo. And it's something that the Miami Heat are going to have to figure out, is all of the assets outside of Bam Adebayo, some of the assets, most of the assets, mm-hmm. because the gut tax is a real thing. What is the gut tax? The gut tax is really what you have to put on the table to trade for a superstar that guts your team. We've seen this so many times, whether it's Damian Lillard to Milwaukee, whether it's Kevin Durant to Phoenix, Harden to Philadelphia, Donovan Mitchell to Cleveland, Rudy Gobert to Minnesota, all these teams that put in a young player, multiple first round picks, the kitchen sink, as I like to call it, putting that into a trade, most famously the Carmelo Anthony trade with Denver and New York in 2010. There's been 11 such trades since 2019 when I went back and looked at this, where you have a young player, cap filler, maybe with a supporting cast member who has a large contract number, and multiple first round picks. 11 of those deals for a superstar or a star player, only two of them have resulted in a championship, and only two of those 11 have resulted in going to the NBA finals. Now, that is not a good hit mark when you're talking about what these teams are giving up in these trades to get a Giannis Antetokounmpo or to get a Kevin Durant. It's a lot. And if you're willing to put in those assets, you have to have the right supporting cast, the right coach, the right front office that can make a lot with scraps. And I think the Miami Heat, they've shown the ability to do that, whether it's the Jimmy Butler era, Dwayne Wade, when he went to the NBA championship in 2006 with a lot of cast-offs and a lot of veterans. The Miami Heat have shown an ability to get players at below-market deals and play way more than their contract or their reputation suggests. A guy like Davion Mitchell is a great example of guys that the Miami Heat get and then produce at a much higher level than other teams were able to do that. So for Giannis, in this Giannis sweepstakes, does Orlando want to gut their team? Do the Boston Celtics want to gut their team? They have to make some serious calculus, because that record, the track record of gutting your team to go for a superstar, 9 out of the 11 teams that acquired the superstar did not even make it to the NBA finals with said superstar. So it's something that every team really needs to marinate and figure out, how much of these assets am I going to put into a deal?
That's a good stat, and definitely a concern with Giannis in his 30s. Moving on to Trae Young, he opted out of his contract, and he will enter free agency this offseason. But as Brian Windhorst reported this morning on Get Up on ESPN, the indications are is that Trae Young is going to stay in Washington and sign a 3-year contract extension there. So there's a little bit of hoopla on Wednesday that Trae could opt out and go to a team with cap space. But according to Wendy's, it seems like he's still likely to go back to the Washington Wizards. And that's not a big surprise at all that Trae Young could be heading back to Washington.
Yeah, Kev, again, this is posture season. Why would he opt out and then have suitors out there to try to bring in Trae Young? Well, one reason why you might want that out there is to raise the extension number for the Washington Wizards. An agent might want to say, hey, look, he's opting out. He could go back to the Wizards on a 3-year deal, but there's other teams out here that could be interested in Trae Young's services at a max number and prepared to offer a max number, which then makes the Washington Wizards be like, all right, fine, we'll add another $10 million, or we'll have a more guarantees into the contract or more bonuses in the contract, and then the agent's done his job. So that's really what it comes down to is the agents and the teams, they have to negotiate what is the number that Trae Young can be agreed to over a three-year extension with the Washington Wizards. But in order to build leverage, the agent needs to have the appearance that other teams are willing to offer more money or comparable money. So do I think that there is really suitors out there willing to give a max deal to Trae Young when all of those teams had an opportunity to trade for him at last deadline and he was essentially traded for salary flotsam? Like, I know CJ McCollum, much better than, you know, just his cap number, but he was on an expiring contract and they were not able to get a first round pick out of that deal for Trae Young. So to me, I think this is the agent for Trae Young and his team trying to muster up as much leverage as they can in these talks with Washington as they can. And I expect that he'll be back. And Kev, if you're really drafting Darren Peterson at number one, Trae Young as a ball handler and playmaker certainly makes up for the lack of playmaking we saw at Kansas.
Yeah, it does. But at the same time, if you have Darren Peterson, let's just say he's the choice, and you also drafted Trae Johnson a year ago, who you still, I'd assume, have belief in, Trae's just a short-term filler. And if you're Trae Young, maybe you do look at, say, Chicago or Brooklyn, these teams that can create a lot of cap space and say, hey, do you have an offer for me? Like, do you want me? I'm open to going there. So maybe it's highly likely he goes to Washington, and I think that is definitely the case. But I wouldn't rule out him taking those meetings for a reason, just for the sake of doing it, as Windhorst said, just to see if there is an alternative out there, just in case. See what happens Tuesday night in the NBA draft. Walker Kessler, he's got a big contract offer on the table. Multiple reports say 5 years, $140 million is on the table for Walker Kessler. He made a big post on Instagram this morning about how he loves Utah and how he wants to be back. And he's like, you don't lay your roots in a place if you don't want to be there. You want significantly more than $140 million over 5 years for a guy who's had some injury issues and been up and down so far in his career. That feels a bit extreme to me, unless they know of something else out there that is significantly more than $28 million average annual value.
Yeah, to me, a guy who missed the entire season, he played 5 games with the injury and hasn't been a beacon of, you know, a stability when it comes to the injury front. Played 58 games last season, not this most recent season, 64 in 23-24. And he played almost every game in his rookie season, but that was coming off the bench. So there isn't really a track record to point to that Walker Kessler is worth about $30 million in this league. And yes, he does fit nicely next to a lot of score-first options there with Ace Bailey, Lowry Markkanen, Jaren Jackson Jr., certainly a defensive player of the year, but I don't consider him a lockdown five center in today's NBA. So Walker Kessler could certainly be a good fit next to those scoring guards and Keontae George and Ace Bailey. But I don't see where he's going to get that kind of money elsewhere. I would be surprised if a restricted free agent.
Chicago, Tom. That's my gut. Chicago, this is not sourced for what it's worth. Let me just make that clear. It is not sourced. But the Bulls can get a lot of cap space if they want to, and they need a five. So if they draft Caleb Wilson at four, if they want a true center to play alongside Caleb Wilson, there's no better choice than Walker Kessler. And so I think Chicago could be a secret team.
That isn't a bad option. Tiago Splitter taking over the job there in Chicago. Certainly a big man who just developed Donovan Klingon last year into one of the best defensive players and the best defensive bigs, stretching the floor. Walker Kessler, I think, imagines himself as someone who can do that. Now, is Utah going to get to that place with the restricted free agency? And Bam McMahon also reported that that it was rejected, that offer. To me, I think he goes back to Utah. But Chicago does present now with Tiago Splitter as the head coach and Caleb Wilson there being a good fit there. It's possible. But about $30 million for Walker Kessler with a restricted tag, maybe that's what it's going to take for Chicago to really land him.
We'll be right back.
Up next, the Golden State Warriors. Anthony Slater wrote on ESPN this week that team sources continue to indicate that Kawhi Leonard's the type of established wing talent that they could pursue in a win-now maneuver. League sources tell Slater that Ballmer, the Clippers owner, has maintained a, quote, firm stance against a Leonard trade, preferring to continue building around his star forward. And then Slater goes on to write how Trey Murphy is the more obtainable wing for the Warriors to target. He said the Pelicans have clung tightly to Trey Murphy, but league sources tell Slater that New Orleans has been signaling a desire to jump into the first round of the draft. That last line is 150% true. The Pelicans are trying to get a pick in the top 20. The Warriors are definitely a team that we could see trade the number 11 pick to New Orleans for Trey Murphy. All that said, though, Tom, I do think the Warriors still want Kawhi Leonard. I still think the Warriors are still going for Kawhi Leonard. The Warriors still want Kawhi. Trey Murphy, as Anthony Slater said, seems to be just the more obtainable guy. But I don't think this Warriors' love for Kawhi Leonard has declined at all. We heard all about it at the deadline after it passed. I think it's still there. It's just a matter of if the Clippers are actually going to decide to go young. And from the conversations I've had with people around the league regarding the Clippers' intentions, it does seem like Ballmer in the front office does want to continue wielding and building with Kawhi Leonard. However, there are some people I've talked to around the league that have also indicated like they might just be trying to leverage their way into getting more back. And that you look at their other actions, trading for Darius Garland and Benedict Mathurin, sending out Zubats for draft picks, the fact that the lottery went the way it did and they have the fifth pick, that their actions are that of a team that is ready to go young. And so I think that that's an intriguing thing to keep in the back of your mind when it comes to what could happen between now and the Warriors being on the clock at number 11. I am not saying that there will be a Kawhi trade. I'd bet against it, but I think it's a possibility.
Yeah, think about it. They had best case scenario with Kawhi Leonard and how amazing of a season he had, second team all NBA, and they didn't even make the playoffs. So if you're Steve Ballmer with the aspiration scandal hanging all over you as we enter the draft night, I would imagine that after that trade, when you trade away James Harden and Ivica Zubac, you're signaling to the marketplace that, wait, maybe they aren't going to be keeping Kawhi Leonard long term, and maybe they are trying to low key rebuild and reload on the fly. And so for me, I think it probably is posturing that he wants to keep Kawhi Leonard, but there's no guarantee that Kawhi is going to be healthy next season. And then you're going to try to trade him after that. Or let him walk for nothing. That to me seems like a ripe opportunity for the Lawrence Frank and the organization to get maximum value for Kawhi Leonard while he's healthy and he's able to say, like, I just had an all NBA, maybe I had him at the fifth slot in my MVP ranking this season. And there isn't a better time than right now to trade Kawhi Leonard, where he is top value, he's healthy, playing at a high level. And so for you to jump into this draft, there are not many teams that are willing to trade the assets to get Kawhi and have a lottery pick in this year's draft. And the Golden State Warriors are them. So if they weren't able to get Paul George a couple years ago, Golden State, Kawhi Leonard does bring you an opportunity to add more veteran leadership on this team and fits right next to Draymond Green and Stephen Curry with this squad. I think it would be a great acquisition for the Warriors, and it would make a lot of sense for the Clippers to move on from this iteration of the Paul George, James Harden, Kawhi Leonard era, and they certainly have already signaled that with the Zubats trade.
It is a no-brainer for the Warriors to try to flip that Jimmy Butler contract. You know, he's expiring, coming off a torn ACL, into Kawhi Leonard. It's an upgrade for your team in the short term. It's an upgrade, period, considering that Jimmy Butler is an inferior player to Kawhi Leonard. And so for the Warriors, it makes total sense, depending on, obviously, what else you're having to give up on top of the 11th pick. I'd imagine the Clippers would probably want Brandon Podziemski, something like that, in return in the deal as well. Pods is going to be a restricted free agent in 1 year from now as well. And so, like, if it's Kawhi Leonard and, I don't know, like, Derek Jones Jr. to the Warriors for 11 Butler Pods, something along those lines, like, that makes a lot of sense to me from the Clippers side of things to get that value. You can get a really high-level prospect with the 11th pick this year. And so for LA, if they enter next season with Garland, who's still only 27, and number 5 and number 11, and, you know, they draft another guy in the second round, and they have Yannick Kohn-Niederhauser, and it's like a fun young team. Never mind how much I really like Kobe Sanders and Jordan Miller, some of their more depth young pieces. But I think for LA, it's the perfect time to move off of Kawhi Leonard. And not only that, if you do get Butler back, he comes back from injury in March, February, March, and he can potentially restore his value entering the summer. And maybe he's a guy you want to re-sign to a one-year deal. And who knows, you could be really competitive right away if you're the Clippers. So I think trading Kawhi makes a lot of sense, though. From the Warriors side, it's more of the no-brainer than it is for the Clippers. So speaking about Los Angeles, Tom, LeBron James in the news cycle, as he always is. This week, there's been reporting around how the Warriors are a backup plan for him. Anthony Slater had mentioned how they could get to the mid-level exception, around $15 million for LeBron James. But the reporting, I believe it was Windhorst, said LeBron is likely to stay in Los Angeles. And I'd imagine that's the case, that LeBron would prefer to stay in LA rather than move up to San Francisco, to the Bay Area, and play with Luka moving forward, and likely bring back Austin Reeves as well, given how great things looked before Luka got hurt against Oklahoma City in March.
Are we ruling out Cleveland? Are we done with Cleveland?
Yeah, you think, Kevin? I haven't heard a peep personally, and unless it's just a private hidden possibility, but I have not heard Cleveland for LeBron.
Yeah.
I haven't heard Miami either, but just for what it's worth.
Yeah. Given that LeBron James is right now on some sort of guy's weekend playing golf with all the his buddies, with J.R. Smith, Channing Frye, Kevin Love. I've been enjoying watching the
No Kyrie. Where's Kyrie?
Well, if you trust J.R. Smith's Instagram comment by saying we didn't miss any or ghost anybody. He ghosted us. We asked him to come and he ghosted us. So it's not a matter of them not reaching out to Kyrie to invite them on this trip. But noting that Richard Jefferson, think about that. Richard Jefferson was there. This should still be the NBA Finals. So he booked this ticket to go to London with LeBron and the rest of the crew in the middle of what would be the NBA Finals. I don't know what that last minute ticket looks like for RJ, but that was really cool to see them hang out. This is what it's all about. The lifelong bonds of winning a championship together. That's why you play team sports, is having the ultimate, the goal of winning a championship, and those things, they last a long time. But notably, Kyrie was not there, but, like, you know what was there is the gray in LeBron's beard. I think the aura that he would have if he kept the gray in an NBA season and he's dropping 30, 10, and 10 on people, I want him to keep that, not just in the offseason. But I do, it reminded me, you know, the Cleveland Cavaliers have a really fascinating offseason here. They have another shortcoming in the postseason. They underperformed. They got swept by the Knicks, where it's a clear indication they're not on the Knicks level. And whether they're in the Giannis Antetokounmpo sweepstakes or not, this is a monster offseason for the Cavs front office. They can run this back and say, hey, the Knicks, they ran it back last year. They got a new head coach, yes, but largely the same core, and they did much better than they did the previous season. But I wonder if we can close the door on the Cleveland for LeBron James. Right now, it's not in the air swirling like he is flying those helicopters around Great Britain. But I do think that LeBron will be back with the Lakers. But I can't imagine him with the storybook ending it would be for him to retire as a Cav one last time. Maybe that's more of an indication, Kev, that this isn't going to be his last season, that he has a couple more in him. And he wants to do one more try here with the Lakers with that core of Luka Doncic and Austin Reeves. And let's not the elephant in the room. His son is still on the team and under contract. Yeah. So him re-upping with the Lakers would not surprise me.
No. And for Cleveland, I mean, it's a two-way street, Tom. Cleveland would want to have to want him back too, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's part of it here for the Cavaliers. I'm not so sure I'd want LeBron back personally, but that's
well,
just
why wouldn't you? Because if you're the Cavs, you certainly haven't shown the ability to get over the hump and have the right guys and play with physicality and leadership in the playoffs. But you would have to kind of give the keys and hand over the organization to LeBron and all the power that he brings. So yes, that would be not just any player you're acquiring. It's a lot of the off court, just the attention, the is this his last season and the farewell tour that could potentially happen. I can understand why those off court, quote unquote, distractions would not be something that they would want to take in. But I also think they need a guy like LeBron. They need a guy who knows what it takes and to play with physicality, because they certainly didn't show that against the Knicks. And they seem so far away from being a championship contender as we've seen the last few years.
They're far away. And I mean, they are far away. I think they need to make bigger moves. I don't think running it back is the best solution. Look, he would help. Don't get me wrong. But I think they need more of a lockdown wing defender than they need to have another creator. They already have James Harden. They already have Donovan Mitchell. That's what I think I'd love to see out of that three spot more so than LeBron James. But I wouldn't fault them, obviously, if they added LeBron. I think for LeBron, I'd imagine being in LA, there's still also a piece of you that's like, we never got a parade. We never got a parade. The Lakers, they win in 2020 in the bubble. They never got a parade. And you see all the images of the New York Knicks at their parade in the streets of New York City today. They're going to have their big celebration at City Hall as well. It's going to be madness in New York City for the entire day, even aside from that parade route. I saw some posts from people I follow on X and on Instagram saying how like they were there at 6 a.m. They weren't able to get in. People waking up early. There's like a picture I saw of a guy with like Knicks face paint. He wasn't able to make it in, you know, and he must have woken up at 3 a.m. to get that face paint going. Yeah, so I wish the parade route were longer in New York City. I'm a little surprised it's as short as it was. But hey, it's still going to be an amazing, amazing moment with a lot of beautiful lifelong images, and I'm sure some great moments when they do get to City Hall.
Yeah, I saw Ben Stiller was on a float. I saw that.
They gave him a float. Ben Stiller got a float? Oh, probably for the documentary he's doing. Yeah.
Yeah, he's on there, and Mike Breen was on there. Some you know, people in the New York circle being on there, not necessarily with the organization, but outside of it too. It's great. I mean, it's a great experience for the fans. I'm wondering, is there anything? I'm trying to think of, is there anything that I'd be willing to cram with 1 million other people on a hot summer day? As compact as they're going to be, is there anything in my life that I would be willing to do that? Is that a sign that I'm like, I've come to a happy place in my life that I don't need to do this? But then I'm like, oh, there's some passions in my life that I would love to be there for. I went to the parade in 2004 for the Red Sox and watched the duck boats with my dad and my two brothers, but it wasn't like this. It wasn't as packed. I mean, we were on the Charles, and it was not nearly what we're seeing here.
There's more space with where the Red Sox had their parade. There's more space.
Yes, more space.
That's why, like, I wish they had Central Park as part of the parade route for the Knicks. There's plenty of space for people there, you know?
I think it's a security thing. Maybe it's just they didn't literally have enough law enforcement to secure the area if they were going to do that. I mean, I can't imagine how many people would require to secure something like Central Park for a long parade route. But it's awesome. I'm happy for Knicks fans and for all the people who are in my mentions who are so upset that I would drop this asterisk piece during the championship rally, the parade. That's the point. I'm trying to make the point that you should enjoy this. Forget the asterisk talk. It's ridiculous. It's garbage. Enjoy this. It is a pure championship, no matter what some idiot on Substack writes at TomTheFinder.com. It's satire. It's an awesome feeling. And we talked about it on the big number this week is that the Knicks have a good chance at repeating next year. I'm not saying that they're the favorites to repeat next year. But I got buddies who are upset that they're not going to be able to make it to the parade because they had schedule conflicts. But to them, I say, look, next year there might be a parade too, because this Knicks team, you don't go 16-3 having the largest point differential in NBA history without the possibility of running it back, regardless of the last eight champions, what that says. I think the Knicks, because of their health this postseason, and the fact that they only played 19 games, they only lost three games. They had long rest between these series. I think the tax, the miles on those tires is actually a lot less than normal champions for the New York Knicks. I think they have a good shot next year.
Tom, I can't wait to see you in person next week in New York City. Live draft show on Tuesday night from Yahoo. We're going to be doing the entire first round. Me, you, King McClure, Ice Young. It's going to be an awesome, awesome night. And who knows, we might get some trades during the daytime. There could be an emergency show that we have to do. Who knows? So I'll be staying ready on Tuesday for the draft. And I'm fired up about it. You studying up this weekend? You diving into my draft guide, getting ready?
Oh, yeah. This is awesome. This is a great time. This is the test that I love cramming for.
All right, thanks to Tom. Coming up, we got my first round mock draft, and this one's going to explore what happens if Darren Peterson goes with the first pick. That's coming up right now. Let's do another mock draft today. 5 days to go until draft night. Today, we're doing an exercise. What happens if Darren Peterson goes number one to the Washington Wizards? Let's start with that number one pick with the Washington Wizards, with the assumption that they take Darren Peterson here with this first pick instead of AJ DiBonsa, who does remain the favorite. But it certainly seems like there is a possibility that Peterson is the choice here. He's had multiple workouts with the Washington Wizards, as has been widely reported across the league in recent days. Now, Sam Vecenie said on Ryan Russillo's podcast with me last night, I was on Ryan's show, Sam brought up how, hey, look, why do they need to see him multiple times? It's not necessarily a great thing that they needed to see him more than once. But while I think that could be true, I also do think that this is a team that just wants to spend as much time as they can with this guy, because Peterson at the high school level was absolutely brilliant. And even in college, despite missing 11 out of 35 games, despite the cramping situation, despite all of those concerns, he still looked like Ray Allen playing off ball, off screens, off handoffs. I mean, the dude was absolutely incredible in that regard. So I think with the Wizards, what's clear is that this does seem to be between Peterson and AJ DiBonsa. As of today, on Thursday, just a handful of days until the NBA draft next Tuesday, it seems like Boozer isn't in consideration here, but at the same time, who knows? Who knows? Maybe this is just all misdirection and they end up going with Boozer with that first pick. Another thing, just a note here regarding the Wizards, my league sources say that the Wizards want another lottery pick. They're trying to trade in to the late lottery. They want another choice. So I wonder if that could also dictate what they do here with this first pick. If they get, let's say, 12 from OKC, would that mean if there's a player they want there, they might go in a different direction at one? Who knows? But that's the latest that I'm hearing around the Wizards, is that aside from all the drama around number one, they are targeting another late lottery pick for a future pick or future picks to get back into the lottery after number one. All right, number two, the Utah Jazz got them taking AJ DiBonsa. Doesn't this just feel like destiny? Doesn't it? He goes to Utah prep. He goes to BYU. His life has been in Utah the last handful of years after growing up in Brockton, Massachusetts, which is where I also grew up, if you didn't know that already. AJ DiBonsa to the Utah Jazz, if Peterson goes number one, feels like a given. I cannot imagine this choice would be that difficult for Utah if AJ is on the board for them. Now, if AJ goes number one, I think there's a real debate between Peterson or Boozer at number two, and you can't rule out the slim chance of Caleb Wilson here either. But ultimately, if AJ DiBonsa is on the board, I cannot see how Ryan Smith, the Jazz owner, passes on that. And I'll tell you what, if DiBonsa does go here to Utah, this is a pretty amazing fit. I think DiBonsa is the type of player he can fit on any team, any situation. But ultimately, with the Utah Jazz, with Jaren Jackson Jr. and Lauri Markkanen, and bring back likely Walker Kessler, I would assume, with Ace Bailey. Ace Bailey as your two, DiBonsa as your three, and all those talented front court players, this would be a massive roster. And DiBonsa would give them the type of go-to scoring punch at that wing forward position to pair with Keontae George in the backcourt that would really, I think, help make Utah really good right away. And as I said, to me, it feels like this is supposed to happen. You know, it feels like DiBonsa is supposed to go to the Utah Jazz, and that's just going to be part of his story. But we'll see how it all plays out. All right, number three, the Memphis Grizzlies, Cameron Boozer. Out of Duke, I would assume if Boozer's on the board, he will be the pick. Boozer feels like a perfect pick next to Zach Edey in that front court. Pair him with Cedric Coward, Jalen Wells, G.G. Jackson. List all the young guys on this Grizzlies roster you want. It goes pretty deep. Oh, Max Prosper even had a good year. Ryan Rupert at the end of the season. Boozer's the type of guy that could elevate this group to a whole new level with his versatility on both ends of the floor, particularly on offense. He can screen, he can roll, he can pick and pop, he can run the pick and roll, he can operate out of face-ups, low post, he can overpower guys, he can create shots for himself, he's a good finisher, cutter. He literally does everything offensively. And that's why in my draft guide, the comparison I have to him that I like most is 2018-19 Blake Griffin. The last time Blake Griffin made an all-star team with the Detroit Pistons, that version of Blake Griffin was a do-it-all player who hit game-winning threes, who ran pick and roll, who did literally everything on the offensive end of the floor and overpowered people. There's not a lot of guys that I can think of historically that have that type of skill set, but that late career version of Blake Griffin and this rookie version of Cam Boozer, I think, are pretty special players, and it's really a compliment to Boozer to pull that comp out. Number four, Chicago Bulls, Caleb Wilson. Nothing changing here. I can't imagine they go in a different direction unless they're going to just shock the world. Caleb Wilson, his athleticism, his versatility on defense would give the Bulls a big that they badly need. Now, I don't think Wilson is the answer to be their rim protector. Like, he can help anchor a defense, but he is not the anchor. You do need a bigger center. So I think for the Bulls, this wouldn't necessarily solve that total problem that they have, but I do think it's the beginning of solving it. And with Caleb Wilson, it's funny, like Draymond Green said on his podcast earlier this week, he thinks the floor for Caleb Wilson is Kevin Garnett, which is absolutely outrageous. Draymond Green and Caleb Wilson share an agency. We know what he's trying to do here, pumping him up. It's crazy to say his floor is one of the 20 greatest players in the history of basketball. Let's be serious here. KG, let's not underrate what he was at his peak in Minnesota, and never mind what he turned into in Boston. KG is an absolute legend. If he's 75% of Kevin Garnett, Caleb Wilson will be a star in this league. That would be a winning result, not the floor. But ultimately, I really like Caleb Wilson. There's so much to like about what he can be at worst, and also when you squint and see what he could potentially become with the ball in his hand. So that's the top four. Peterson won. This is the point of this mock. What happens if Peterson goes one? That means DiBonsa goes two to Utah, Cameron Boozer three to Memphis, and then Chicago, Caleb Wilson. And then we get to number five. And this is where things get really, really interesting. If you remember back after the lottery, I think it was my first or second mock draft after the lottery, I had a report in there that the Clippers love Braden Burris and that they view him as a good fit next to Darius Garland in their backcourt. This week, it's been reported, I believe it was Jake Fisher over at the Steinline. Correct me if I'm wrong here, but Jake Fisher, I think, reported that Ty Lue is in love with Brayden Burries, that Burries had a great workout with the Clippers. And so this is now two reports. I had something in middle of May. Now there's stuff in the week before the draft that the Clippers really like Brayden Burries. So he is going to be the selection here for the Clippers here, in part due to the fit, in part due to just simply the player that he is. I think he's going to be a winning player, 6'4", with a real strong 200-plus pound frame, versatile defensive player, can play with and without the ball, shows some on-ball scoring juice, but also the ability to be a cutter, a screener, doing the role player type of dirty work. And I think that makes sense for this Clippers roster, regardless of Garland's presence, but especially because of Garland's presence. Now, all that said, in recent weeks, I've pretty consistently reported that the Clippers are a very highly likely trade-down team. If there's any team that trades down, it could be the Clippers. And as I reported in my most recent mock draft, the Clippers at 5 and the Nets at 6 could potentially take Darius Acuff to force the Kings to trade up. I still believe there's a chance of that. I think if the Clippers stay at 5 or if they trade down, you're going to see them look at Brayden Burries or Mykal Brown. That feels highly probable to me. Keaton Wagler can't rule him out either, of course, a bigger guard, but that seems to be the focus here. They could take Acuff. And even before the draft, within the next few days, I think you could potentially see the Clippers and Kings swap spots. The Kings to assure that they get Acuff so Brooklyn doesn't take him and potentially keep him. And then the Clippers could still get their guy at number 7. So just something to keep in mind regarding the Clippers with what they could do on draft night or even before draft night. Number 6. The Brooklyn Nets, I got them taking Mykal Brown out of Louisville. Mykal Brown is one of my favorite guards in this draft class. I have him ranked in my top 6. I think with him, he didn't have the best year at Louisville, up and down, dealing with a back injury. He did also have a back injury in the overtime elite a couple of years ago as well. So from one of my conversations with teams, and it's hard to know who's lying to you and who's not, but my conversations with different people around the league are that the back stuff is not really a concern. I remember Chad Ford was on my podcast months ago, and he had said how, well, if it's a chronic back thing, that'd be scary. That's concerning. It doesn't seem like it's a chronic back thing. Mykal Brown has worked out for 7 of the top 10 teams. From what I've heard, is he's really excelled in workouts and impressed teams and interviews in the same way that he did with me when he came in my podcast. I really liked him. He has a very good head on his shoulders. And I think with him, like the one edge you give him over Acuff is the more talented offensive player as a creator. He's more proven. The edge you'll give Mykal Brown is that he has a lot of those character traits on offense, but also he's just a way better defensive player. He's so active, so much energy in the passing lanes, plays hard, and he's bigger. So I think with Mykal Brown going 6 to Brooklyn, I could see them taking him and potentially even just keeping him at this choice here. Number 7, Sacramento Kings. In this mock, they get their guy. Darius Acuff. Acuff has been connected to the Kings ever since they fell in the lottery, in part because of the connection with Scott Perry, having a relationship with Acuff's father. They're all Detroit guys. They're all from Detroit, Michigan, Acuff included. And so it seems to me, from my understanding, is that Acuff's group wants him in Sacramento. And the Kings also, this is just a one-way street, the Kings also really like Acuff as well and view him as a potential future of the franchise. And that's why I think there is a real chance that Clippers at 5 or Brooklyn at 6 does have the leverage to force the Kings to move up. Because it feels very telegraphed that Sacramento wants Acuff. They're signaling that if Acuff isn't on the board, they're very comfortable with Kingston Flemings. They're very comfortable with another guard. I don't totally buy that. And I think there's a chance we'll see a draft trade with Sacramento moving up to assure they get Acuff. Number 8, Atlanta Hawks. Got Keaton Wagler slip into number 8 here to the Atlanta Hawks. Wagler is 5th on a lot of boards, and he very well might end up going 5th. Wagler, super talented, 6'5 guard, can play with and without the ball. And to me, that's one of the key qualities that would make him a great fit for this Hawks team. And I really can't see him falling past Atlanta. If he does get to 8, I don't think Atlanta's going to pass on him at all. He just is a great fit for that Quinn Snyder offense. We have seen how Nikhil Alexander-Walker and CJ McCollum and all these guards have come alive when they've embraced playing with and without the ball. And Wagler has so much of those traits with his ability to create off the dribble, to create shots on the perimeter, to use his craftiness to get into the paint area, but also the intelligence off ball as a cutter, I think, would really come alive in Atlanta's system. And plus, with his size at 6'5", he's somebody you could play next to CJ McCollum, who I assume is going to go back to Atlanta, play him next to Nikhil Alexander-Walker, and they could have a pretty exciting team taking an even bigger step next year's NBA regular season. Number 9, Dallas Mavericks. This is an interesting result here in this mock draft. If indeed we see Michael Brown, let's say Brayden Burries, Michael Brown, Darius Haycuff, Keaton Wagler go 5-8, that leaves Kingston Flemings for Dallas at number 9, and that is the pick here. We're going with Kingston Flemings. However, Masai Ujiri historically hasn't drafted small guards. The guard he last drafted was DeLon Wright in the 20s. And I think with Masai Ujiri, there's a question now of, is he making the pick or is Mike Schmitz making the pick in Dallas? There's a real uncertainty around the league about who's actually making the final call on this pick. It's also possible that Masai Ujiri is picking the player at 9 and that Mike Schmitz is picking the player at pick 30 with this new Mavericks front office. And also, how much does the philosophy that Masai had in Denver and Toronto really apply to Dallas? It might not at all. And every player is their own story. And Kingston Flemings, if he is indeed the pick here with the Mavericks, I think he'd be a really, really fascinating fit with Cooper Flagg. Two guys that are selfless, high IQ players. The Flemings' lack of size, I think, can almost be an asset next to Cooper Flagg in the sense that if you're defending Flemings with his speed and quickness and burst, you might not want to switch the guy defending Flagg onto Flemings. Maybe that disparity could be a tool for Dallas rather than a detriment. Whereas if you have Keaton Wagler, who's not the quickest, maybe you comfortably can switch Wagler, Flagg, screen, and rolls. So I think Flemings has a lot of value here for Dallas if he is indeed the pick. But also I could see them going with a bigger player, Nate Amendt, Kareem Lopez. I could see them trying to trade up. I could see them even trying to trade down, willing to trade down to 12 with Oklahoma City and still get a guy there that they really value. So don't rule that out either. Do not rule down a trade down with Dallas from 9 to 12-ish if this is indeed the way the board falls. Number 10, Milwaukee Bucks. Obviously, everybody's focusing on the Giannis Antetokounmpo stuff. What's going to happen there? I've got them taking Nate Amendt with this selection. Amendt, it feels like his absolute bottom of the barrel floor is Chicago at 15, but in all likelihood, Amendt's floor is number 10 with the Milwaukee Bucks. From my conversations with people around the league, it seems like the Bucks are in love with Amendt's potential. They're willing to take a swing and see what he can turn into after an up-and-down season last year at Tennessee, where he wasn't nearly as efficient as a scorer off the catch, wasn't nearly as effective as a scorer on the dribble. And yet, guys who are 6'10", that can handle, shoot, make plays off the bounce, they don't grow on trees. And that's why I think the Bucks are a real bet to take Amendt if he does end up falling to number 10. And he may not. I can see the Nets taking him at number 6 as well, or even a team moving up to the number 5 spot to take him as well. But number 10 seems to be his floor. Number 11, the Golden State Warriors. I got them taking Kareem Lopez. He's a Mexican forward who spent this last year playing for the New Zealand Breakers in the Australian League. Lopez is just rock solid, steady, good all-around player. I had a conversation with an executive this week about Kareem Lopez because I'm trying to figure out what's his ceiling, what's his floor, and I've asked a ton of people about that, and nobody really seems to have the best idea, but consistently it seems like Lopez, his ceiling is around 9 to Dallas, and then his floor could be, I think, 15 to 18 range as his floor. But I think 11 to Golden State is a is a good spot for him, in part because the physicality with Lopez, you see him in person, the strength and size that he has. He's a very girthy player. I think he has the physicality and the toughness to play in the NBA right away, which would appeal to a Warriors team that is still trying to win with Stephen Curry, bringing back Steve Kerr and likely bringing back Draymond Green, but also with the future potential with what he could be as he hones his shot, as he continues improving on the defensive end of the floor, learning the intricacies of making the proper rotations. I think Golden State would be a great spot for him, and for the Warriors, a solid pick compared to the other guys remaining on the board. Number 12, the Oklahoma City Thunder, long rumored to potentially move up. The Warriors, I got them taking Adai Mara. Mara has long been reported as the potential target for OKC if they move up. I don't know how true that is. OKC, every year it feels like there's a target they have. One year it's Poku. That turned out to be true. Another year it was a James Booknight. That wasn't true. It was a smokescreen. Another year it was Cason Wallace. That turned out to be true. This year it's Mara. Is it Mara if they're trying to move up? I don't know. I don't know if it's the real answer, but ultimately I do think Mara would make a lot of sense for OKC, especially if he's on the board at number 12 at 7'3 with playmaking skill, flashed a jumper upside, even though I have my questions there. He's just mammoth. He's just a huge guy, and that would give something OKC does need, even after drafting Sorber 1 year ago. Sorber is not as big as Mara, and I think having a guy like that in your rotation would make a hell of a lot of sense. Number 13. Miami Heat, Christian Anderson. This is maybe a little bit higher than a lot of people have him, but Christian Anderson, from what I understand, has worked out for a lot of these teams in this range. And with Christian Anderson, I think he makes sense for Miami if they stay put. I think he also makes sense for Milwaukee if they do end up trading Giannis for this pick and a lot else. Christian Anderson, he is an elite shooter off the catch and off the dribble, really runs a tight ship out of pick and rolls. And for the Miami Heat or whoever is in the spot, Christian Anderson very well could be the guy who goes ahead of Bennett Sturts, LeBaron Filon, and some of these guards in this range of the draft. So I'll go with Anderson here to the Heat. Number 14, Merez Johnson to the Charlotte Hornets. Again, I've had Merez Johnson here, I think, 5 mocks in a row at this point. I do not foresee Merez Johnson falling past the Hornets at 14. That seems to be what everybody around the league is assuming right now. Doesn't mean it's true. He might even go higher. Maybe he does slip past Charlotte, but all indications are the Hornets are trying to reshape their front court. They're very happy with Musa Diabate and drafting Ryan Kalkbrenner last year, but it seems like adding more depth there, more versatility, having more ways to play. There's nobody better than Merez Johnson with his ability at 6'9" with a 7'5" wingspan and elite athleticism where he can play some 3 for you. He can play some 5. He can plug and play into different roles. He would make perfect sense for the Charlotte Hornets next to their core of Con Knipple, Brandon Miller, and LaMelo Ball. Number 15, Chicago Bulls. I had them taking Caleb Wilson with the 4th pick. We're going with Hannes Steinbach out of Washington here. Hannes, I think, would be a great pairing next to Caleb Wilson in the front court. To me, this is the vision of what the Bulls should be angling for here. They do need a guard. I think there's a lot of guards here that would make sense, but I think if you can have a front court of Steinbach with Caleb Wilson, and then you already have Noah Asenge and Matis Buzelis and Josh Giddey, that team is huge. That team is big. And I think there's something to that with some of these teams around the league. Like if Boozer goes to Memphis, for example, that team is big. If Boozer goes to Utah, that team is big. If we see the Bulls draft 2 bigs in this year's class, that team would be massive. And that could be a important tool, I think, for beating the Thunder, for beating the Spurs in the Western Conference, and for getting through anybody in the East as well. Number 16, Memphis Grizzlies. I got Bennett Sturts to the Grizzlies here with this selection. Sturts is just such a good overall point guard, a do-it-all guy. He can play with the ball, can play without the ball. We had a funny conversation on Ryan Russillo's podcast between me and Vicini the other day, and I had mentioned I watched all of Sturts's catch-and-shoot jumpers in his 4 years of college, and Russillo joked, would it take you 4 minutes to watch that? Because there wasn't many of them. It's true, it did take about 4 minutes, but he shot nearly 50% on those shots. He had plenty of no dip threes. And I say all this to say, Sturts is a guy who always had the ball in his hands in college, But in the NBA, as he said in his interview with me on my podcast, he wants to prove to teams that he can play off ball. And from what I understand, he is doing exactly that with his shooting off the catch, just lighting the rim on fire in pre-draft workouts. And so I think for the Memphis Grizzlies, pairing him in this mock draft with Cam Boozer would give them a really solid foundation moving forward with Sturts, Boozer, Edie, and Coward. Number 17, somebody's going to fall. In this mock draft, it's Jaxel Lindenborg. I have him falling to number 17 to the Oklahoma City Thunder. And I think with OKC, this would probably be, let's just say they don't move up. Let's say they stay at 12 and 17 entering the draft. This is probably a dream scenario for the Thunder. If Lindenborg is here on the board, I think they would have so many calls from teams in the 20s, Chicago, Philadelphia, New York, Lakers, Nuggets, Celtics, teams trying to move up to 17, being willing to give future draft capital. This is probably the dream scenario for the Thunder. And they very well could just take him and keep him. I could see the Thunder keep taking him at 12, for that matter. I could see that happening. But with Lindenborg, a lot of up and down reports around his workouts, still recovering from his injury that he suffered at the end of the Michigan season. March wasn't that long ago. So I think with all the pre-draft workouts, it hasn't been the best workout circuit for Jaxel, to my understanding. But at the same time, the versatility this guy has is just unreal. And if he does fall to 17, there's a chance he ends up being one of the steals of this 2026 NBA draft, which is why if he does slip, it's going to be even more teams being aggressive to try to move up. Number 18, the Charlotte Hornets get them taking Allen Graves out of Santa Clara here. Graves, to me, is just like a raw upside bet. 6'8" freshman who came off the bench last year for Santa Clara. Up and down season for him. Didn't have the best performances against quad one and quad two teams, as I've noted in my draft guide. And ultimately, I think with him, you're betting for the future. And if they get Merez Johnson at 14 and Allen Graves at 18, you get one guy who can help you now and one guy who might be able to help you later in Allen Graves. Number 19, Toronto Raptors. I got them taking LeBaron Filon out of Alabama. Shifty, small guard, only 176 pounds. There's some real concern there, which is why I don't have him taken in the lottery, even though there's still a chance of that given his skill level. But he's under 180. Not a lot of those guys have had great success in the NBA, but the Raptors do need a guard. They do have the right situation to surround a smaller guard like Filon with all their length and versatility and tough, hard-nosed defensive players, Colin Murray, Boyles, Scotty Barnes, up and down the line for that Raptors team. They need a big and they need a guard. In this mock draft, I got the Raptors taking a guard to help them there. Number 20, the San Antonio Spurs. I get them taking Chris Cenac out of Houston. This is an interesting spot for San Antonio. I could see them going in a lot of different directions here, but to me, adding another front court player that can play next to Wemby is important. And if that front court player can space the floor, allowing Wemby to play inside, that is of the utmost importance. And Chris Cenac, Henry Vissar, there's a couple of guys in this draft range where I think it makes a lot of sense next to Wemby. And Cenac gets the nod here. He's a very perimeter-oriented big man, 6'10", with good length, should project long-term as a good defensive player as well. And I think for the Spurs, you'd be taking a guy that was formerly projected in the top 10 and slipped after a okay season that he had as a freshman at Houston. So Cenac gets the pick here, potentially a steal for the Spurs. Number 21, Detroit Pistons. I get them taking Cameron Carr. Cameron Carr out of Baylor. This is a Pistons team that could very well move up. They are talking to teams that try to move up. Now, are they trying to move up because they want to pick higher, or are they trying to move up because they're trying to bolster their ammo for trades? They are pursuing 3-and-D wings in the trade market right now. They're trying to make some moves with their future draft capital, and they have all of their own picks. But if they stay put here with this 21st pick, I think Cameron Carr would make a lot of sense. This feels like around his floor, 6'5", sophomore, versatile creator on offense, can handle the ball a bit, can play off ball. I'm a big Cameron Carr fan. Even though he's a bit lean, he does need to get stronger. And so for Detroit at 21 could potentially be a steal in this range. But there's a reason why he's not lottery. From what I've heard is the workout circuits for him have not gone quite as beautifully as the NBA draft combine single scrimmage game that he played, where he was awesome and by far the best player on the floor. It's not like he has continued blowing through everybody in pre-draft workouts. It's been more of what you expected. Some good ones, some okay ones. Number 22, Philadelphia 76ers. I get them taking Dalen Swain, 6'7", Texas junior wing. Swain has everything you look for in a modern-day wing except for one thing. He's got the defensive versatility. He's got the length. He's got the playmaking ability off ball. Offensively, he can create off the dribble, get to the rim. He was an elite isolation scorer last year at Texas. He's a willing passer. What he doesn't have is a jumper. And that's with Swain, why he's going to be a guy likely picked in the late teens or 20s rather than somebody in the lottery. And with Swain, unless he can prove over the course of time that he can become a good shooter, it's going to be hard for him to be a high-level NBA player. Now, there's some positive indicators with Swain, which is why I think he makes sense for the Sixers. As the Sixers build this thing out, they have Maxey. They have Edgecombe. Adding either a big here or another wing to complete that backcourt, to complete that trio, would make sense. And with Swain, 80%+ from the free throw line, 50% on floaters. He's got touch. It's just that it hasn't translated to outside of the paint at any point yet in his career. Number 23, the Atlanta Hawks. So at number 8, I had them taking Keaton Wagler. And number 23 here, I have them taking Henry Vissar out of North Carolina. I think if you're the Hawks, having a big here would make a lot of sense to pair with Onyeka Okongwu. I think Vissar, I see him sometimes in the 30s in mock drafts, and he very well might go in the 30s. That's very possible. But I think 23 is a good spot for him because of how much Atlanta values a big that can space. They pushed Okongwu for years to improve as a three-point shooter, and he has. Vissar is entering the NBA as a 40% guy from three-point range. But not only that, he's somebody that can screen and roll and catch and finish lobs. So I think with Vissar, the versatility that he has, one of the comps in the draft guide I have is John Collins. That's somebody Atlanta once had. And that skill set I think would be very valuable in that front court next to Okongwu as they build it out. Number 24 for the New York Knicks. They got their parade going on right now as we speak. I got them taking Koa Pete out of Arizona. It wasn't the best year for Pete, of course, and his shot looks like an absolute disaster in pre-draft workouts, but he's 6'7". He is a highly versatile, tough, hard-nosed player. Comes from a family of offensive linemen, and you can just see it with the toughness with which he plays with. And so for the Knicks, I think if there's any situation that's good for Koa Pete, it's this one, because you can pair him in the front court next to Karl Anthony Towns. Cat can be your floor spacing big. Pete can be your interior bruiser. And James Dolan, the Knicks owner, had hinted about the fact that it's going to be tough for this team to run it back with the same exact roster. It's very possible Mitchell Robinson could go elsewhere. They're going to need a tough guy off the bench. And granted, you would want somebody who's a true seven-footer like Mitchell Robinson. I think you can get that guy in the second round and maybe here find this Swiss Army knife piece like Koa Pete with the 24th pick. All right, number 25, there's a guard who I really like that's fallen down the board here, and that's Ibuka Okori. I challenge you, like, tell me a team ahead of this pick that you think could definitely draft a guard. We had Filon at 19, 20 Spurs, do they need another guard? 21 Pistons, maybe. I could possibly see it. Philadelphia, they don't need another guard. Atlanta, they already drafted Wagler. 24, Knicks, they got Brunson. They don't want another guard. The Lakers, Okori could fall into their lap here. Some guard is going to slip into the 20s, and Okori's the guy in this year's mock draft. He took half his shots at the rim at Stanford last year. I think he's going to be a way, way better shooter than his numbers were at Stanford when he hit 34% of his threes. Too many positive indicators with his touch from floater range, with his high free throw percentage at over 80%. Okori, to me, is somebody that would be a great fit for this Lakers team. The size disparity with him and Luka, I think, would be valuable in terms of two-man actions between those guys. You do not want to switch Luka's guy onto Okori with Okori's speed and explosiveness. You do not want to switch a quicker, small defender in Okori onto Luka with his size. So I think, like, as much as size matters in the NBA, having sometimes a smaller guy can be incredibly valuable too. And if you have somebody who's quick and fast and explosive, like Okorie, in the backcourt next to Luka, I think that could lead to pretty incredible results. Number 26, the Denver Nuggets. I get them taking Malik Thomas out of Arkansas. He's the other guy with Arkansas. Everybody focuses on Darius Acuff, but Malik Thomas was awesome this year in the moments that Darius Acuff was sidelined. We saw Thomas have some big games with the ball in his hands and when Acuff was off the floor. But primarily the appeal here to me for Denver is the fact that this is somebody that can play with or without the ball. And that's exactly what you need with Nikola Jokic. He can run through screens, run through dribble handoffs. And for Denver at this point of the draft, I mean, hey, if you need to create trade ammunition and free up Jamal Murray, hey, draft another Jamal Murray and Malik Thomas. So here, I like that pick here. Number 27, Boston Celtics. I get them taking Jaden Quaintance out of Kentucky. The word around Quaintance is not great right now. Obviously, medical is the type of thing that's hard to talk about. And everybody, you know, every team has their own evaluations of what is good medical and what is bad medical. With Quaintance, it seems like there's some teams that are like, we'll just pass. And then there are other teams, perhaps like Boston, that are like, sure, why not? Why would we not take this guy who's 6'9" and highly athletic, an incredible defensive player who can switch against literally anybody? He can defend fives because he's so big and tough and strong at 250 with length and size, but he's also quick enough to defend guards and wings, and you can comfortably switch him 1 through 5 or plug and play him off ball, rim protector, helper, or primary big on the floor too. He can do it all. The injury he had, though, definitely did sap him of some explosiveness. But for Boston at 27, it's hard to fathom a better upside fit here. And they had a guy in Robert Williams who he very much compares to, where they managed his minutes and injuries early in his career and helped him build out the career that he has. And so I think Quaintance, this might be around his floor, 27. I can't see him slipping into the second round. I think there's a promise out there for Quaintance. I think he's going to be a first-round pick. It's just a matter of where exactly that floor is for him. Number 28, Minnesota Timberwolves. I get them taking Isaiah Evans, a Duke sophomore wing. Isaiah Evans would be a nice fit for this team. They Dante DiVincenzo out for all of next season and possibly on the trade block as well. Evans is the type of guy who could come in right away, play minutes for you, play off of Anthony Edwards, and with his improving handle, you'd hope over time that can keep developing for him, and he can be a guy who can create off the dribble out of pick and rolls as well. Number 29, Cleveland Cavaliers. I got them taking Sergio Della Rea, 6'6" Valencia wing. I think he is way underrated in part because of just how deep this draft is with so many college basketball players. But Della Rea, I think in any normal year would probably be a top 20 pick, and maybe he end up does going top 20. I would not rule that out with his size, shooting ability at over 40% this current season for Valencia, and then the ability to create off the dribble, the pick and roll ability, the size, the versatility. Della Rea, very underrated in my opinion. I think for Cleveland here at number 29, he would be great. A great guy to replace some of their wings who are going to be free agents. Number 30, the Dallas Mavericks. I get them taking Terrace Reed, a 6'10" UConn center. This is after having them with the 9th pick take Kingston Flemings. Here's another big for the rotation. Hopefully Derek Lively can come back and stay healthy, but that seems to be a little bit of wishful thinking here. Terrace Reed is just rock solid. We saw him dominate in the tournament to UConn to help bring them to the national championship where they lost to Michigan, but Terrace Reed is just a good player. He's going to come in right away as a senior and be able to play and get minutes for you. And I think for the Dallas Mavericks, if you want to try to win next season, and it does seem like they want to try to do that, and you got Kyrie Irving, like he's a mentor to Kingston Flemings, and then you draft Terrace Reed, and hopefully Derek Lively can be healthy with Cooper Flagg taking the leap to possibly all NBA level, that team could be a threat to make the playoffs next year in the Western Conference. That's it for this mock draft. We are near the actual draft itself. Next Tuesday, 8:30 p.m. I'm fired up for it. I'm going to be live with King McClure, Ice Young, Tom Haverstraw here on Yahoo NBA. So definitely be sure to subscribe. Hit that bell button as well so you get notifications every time we go live. And because, hey, who knows? We might be doing emergency podcasts over the weekend as well. I still think there's a strong chance that Giannis Antetokounmpo gets traded ahead of the draft. So we'll see what happens there. That's it for this first round. Thank you to everybody watching us live here on YouTube. Really appreciate that. Thank you to Emmy and the whole team for producing today's episode. I'll be back on Monday, probably later in the evening, with a special edition draft preview episode, and then Tuesday as well, and potentially emergency podcast. So watch out for those on the Kevin O'Connor Show. Check out Tom at Tom the Finder. You can also read him at Yahoo Sports and check out his show, The Big Number. We will talk to you later. Have a good weekend, everybody.